Speaking of rental costs and housing, there's a California property owner suing California for violating Fourth Amendment through mandatory participation in Section 8 housing program. Not too long ago, I mentioned on the air that if you're a landlord or a property manager, if anyone calls you and says, "Do you accept Section 8 housing?" the answer is yes. Not, "Let me get back to you. Let me check with the owner." The answer is yes. I had a client owned 60 units, 62 units, maybe 20 plus years ago, and he told me he accepted Section 8 and he got more rental money for per unit than some of the market rate rents. So he was happy to take them. Now, this fellow, Thomas Manning, is a Sacramento-based property manager and the founder of Tower Bridge Property Management, manages over 300 properties. And one thing he says clouds his work is this state mandate that puts his claim, his Fourth Amendment rights, and those of every California property owner at risk. In 2019, the state of California amended its Fair Employment and Housing Act to prohibit landlords from declining an otherwise qualified potential renter's application because they use Section 8 housing vouchers. This is where the government comes in and pays part of the rent. They're going to guarantee part of the rent. So seems on its face to be a good thing. So it effectively, though, what the state did is require participation in the Section 8 program. And to participate, landlords must grant the local housing authority, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, full and free access to the assisted rental unit and to their own facilities, equipment, and records containing information to the unit. Reoccurring inspections are conducted without a warrant, probable cause, or opportunity for pre-compliance review. So this property manager sees that as a violation of his rights.
Well.
The Constitution protects, yada, yada, yada. Participation in a federal program does not erase that protection. Remember, we discussed the Isla Vista, recent program, and I think the tenant can say no to that, what they're doing in Isla Vista, but I don't think the landlord can. So states cannot force anyone to participate in a federal program that Congress made optional. Well, that's interesting. Represented at no cost by Pacific Legal Foundation. One of the attorneys that I have interviewed in the past, David Dearson, is one of the three attorneys. They filed a federal lawsuit to challenge California's forced participation mandate. Can't compel them. Well, you know, Section 8, I remember a month or two ago, interviewed somebody who was opposed to rent control and said that, you know, if the state wants to get involved, let them pay for it. And that's what Section 8 is. So in a way, it's a good thing. Of course, the government's paying for it, you're paying for it, but it's better than rent control, one could argue. So I sent this to a property manager and he replied, "Thanks for sending me this. I have not seen this particular lawsuit, but understand the concerns. Section 8 works well for some and provides needed benefits, but it has its own challenges. In the past, we didn't participate as they required their own lease forms, and tenancies could be terminated by them, meaning the government, leaving the owner with residents unable to pay the rent." Now, I never heard that. That's not fair. If the government makes a deal with a landlord to support and pay Section 8 part of the rent, you're telling me the government can just terminate the individual? They no longer qualify for Section 8, but it doesn't terminate the tenancy, and then the landlord doesn't get paid. He has to like get them to get possession, and then the tenant can draw that out. And he's in his experience, they go to legal aid and they delay vacating. And so then the landlord has got a unit where it's not being paid rent. So it's things like this that say, well, you got a good idea. This Section 8, I think it is a good idea. I think it is a good idea. But how do you allow that to happen? So maybe instead of suing them over his Fourth Amendment rights, sue that, get rid of that caveat. Because then it takes away the downside for a landlord. That's ridiculous. Okay. It's good to have a soapbox. Last week, I mentioned an agent who was found to be price gouging. He had a lease after the fire in Los Angeles, and he jacked up the price, and someone was looking at it, but then when he jacked up the price, they couldn't rent it. So they found him guilty, and they punished him. And so there was another settlement, a luxury hotel, to settle a price gouging lawsuit. Langham International Luxury Hotel Corporation, Langham Hotels Pacific Corp, will pay $320,000 to end claims that raise costs above 10% after the fire. Wow. After the wake of the Eden fire. Pasadena guests, they raised the rates by more than 10% from normally posted rates after the wildfire. And under California law, it's illegal to raise prices on goods by more than 10% after the governor's office has declared a state of emergency. Sounds very reasonable. And according to the lawsuit, according to a stipulated judgment, I should say, entered into Friday between Langham and the county, the company had an automated pricing system in place, but a cap on price increases was not immediately implemented. Why does that sound so familiar? God, there was another story where something should have happened. Oh, well, I don't want to get into that. Too political. So it resulted in raising the hotel guests in excess of allowed. So the district attorney's office has not criminally prosecuted anyone for price gouging since the fires, but they've gone after alleged violators of the state in civil court. LA city attorney sued rental giant Airbnb for alleged price gouging last summer in the wake of the devastating Palisades fire. She won a $1.2 million in restitution from Blueground, another large-scale home rental company, to settle a similar lawsuit this year. So the question is, where does this money go? Does it do anything for anybody? It should. They should do something. I've been listening to a New York City radio station, and all of a sudden I'm starting to hear ads for the bank, Apple Bank. And I thought, wow, did Apple start a bank? I know they got these credit cards. And I looked it up, and Apple Computer trademarked Apple in 1977. That the Apple Bank was originally founded as the Harlem Savings Bank in 1863. And in 1983, they adopted Apple Bank, you know, because they're part of the Big Apple. And apparently, because it's a bank and Apple Computers didn't challenge that in 1983, or maybe they weren't big enough. So they both exist, although Apple Computer had to settle something with Apple Music, the Beatles. That's a whole nother story. Okay, you're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. RadioRealEstate.com. We'll take a quick break and come back with the weekly multiple listing sales update.